Since learning that geese are primarily herbivores, I figured I would try feeding this fluffy white goose some organic dinosaur kale, a dark green leafy vegetable that is popular in Italian food, but apparently not so popular with waterfowl. Well, if he's not going to eat, then at least I'm going to. And on the menu today, we have edamame, which are steamed soybeans, kind of salty, albacore sushi, unagi sushi, which is freshwater eel, salmon eggs, also salty, but very good, spider roll, which is softshell crab, and no, not really spiders, baked mussels, which I like a lot, and some yellowtail sushi, which is more of an acquired taste. When I was at the market buying the dinosaur kale, someone I met there recommended that I try it with lotus root, which is something new to me, but popular in some Asian cuisine, particularly soup, which got me thinking about the lotus flower, a species of aquatic plant, sometimes also called the water lily, but in occult religions influenced by ancient Aryans, particularly in Asia, it's referred to as the sacred lotus. Sacred to Hindus and Buddhists, the lotus is the national flower of India. In Greek mythology, the lotus eaters were a race of people living on an island dominated by the lotus plant, whose botanical identity is uncertain, but its fruit and flowers were the primary food of the island and were a narcotic, causing the inhabitants to sleep in peaceful apathy. According to the myths, after they ate the lotus, they would forget their home and loved ones, and only long to stay with their fellow lotus eaters. Those who ate the plant never cared to report nor return. In Homer's epic poem, The Odyssey, Odysseus tells how adverse north winds blew him and his men off course as they were rounding the southernmost tip of the Peloponnesus, which is the part of Greece the Spartans were from, headed westwards for Ithaca. Quote, I was driven thence by foul winds for a space of 9 days upon the sea, but on the 10th day we reached the land of the lotus eaters, who live on a food that comes from a kind of flower. Here we landed to take in fresh water, and our crews got their midday meal on the shores near the ships. When they had eaten and drunk, I sent two of my company to see what manner of men the people of the place might be, and they had a third man under them. They started at once and went about among the lotus eaters, who did them no hurt, but gave them to eat of the lotus, which was so delicious that those who ate of it left off caring about home and did not even want to go back and say what had happened to them, but were for staying and munching lotus with the lotus eaters, without thinking further of their return. Nevertheless, though they wept bitterly, I forced them back to the ships and made them fast under the benches. Then I told the rest to go on board at once, lest any of them should taste of the lotus and leave off wanting to get home. So they took their places and smote the gray sea with their oars. Herodotus, in the 5th century BC, was sure that the lotus eaters still existed in his day. Quote, a promontory jutting out into the sea from Libya is inhabited by the lotus eaters, who live entirely on the fruit of the lotus. The lotus fruit is about the size of a lentisk berry, and in sweetness resembles the date. The lotus eaters even succeed in obtaining from it a sort of wine. So, it is clear that we're dealing with an intoxicant, and one that seems to possess the properties of alcohol, but also is in a way similar to opium, or even ephedra, which is very close in effect to methamphetamine. Some compare it to psilocybin, better known as magic mushrooms, but with unique properties that make it best suited for prolonged mystery school sex rituals, where a state of spiritual ecstasy was attained to aid the initiate into what some refer to as a Gnostic trance, an altered state of consciousness, often described as mindlessness, somewhere between waking and sleeping. Shamans have been using different natural drugs as gateways to powerful trance states for thousands of years. The Dionysian mysteries use wine and narcotics as a means of achieving trance alongside ecstatic dancing. Dancing ecstatically to rapid or repetitive music can put the mind in a state similar to a high, and it also tires out the body. So if you dance or whirl, like Sufis often do, and then quickly fall to the ground, the dizzy or euphoric feeling makes it difficult for your conscious mind to be in control, and so it's easier to merge with the subconscious. The euphoric dancing was normally followed by a drug-fueled orgy. Which brings us to the blue lotus, or water lily, which not only has psychedelic properties, but is also known as an aphrodisiac. Originally sprouting on the banks of the River Nile and some parts of East Africa, inhabited by the seafaring Phoenicians in antiquity, this exquisite flower eventually made its way to the Indian subcontinent and other parts of Asia, probably via the Silk Road. The ancient Egyptians revered this flower and used it to alleviate pain, depression, and experience spiritual awakenings. The psychoactive properties make this flower a strong hallucinogen, which the ancient Egyptians combined with mandragora, another psychoactive plant, to conduct erotic rituals that allegedly aided in nurturing of the vital life force energy that they called Ka. Little is known about their understanding of this flower other than what is written down in their medicinal papyri and depicted on walls of the temple Karnak. It is interesting to note that water lilies were frequently used as a motif in the funerary art of the Egyptians as well as the Mayans. From the middle of the classical period until the inception of the Mexican periods, the water lily motif is extremely common, especially in association with the toad. These toads also contain glands that release a substance that can induce profound hallucinations in people. Based on some of the Mayan art, which includes the water lily serpent, the water lily jaguar, and water lilies associated with masked dancers as percussion instruments are played, one can easily conclude that the depictions support the contention that the water lily was used as a ritual narcotic. That said, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the religious scripture that would help the deceased navigate the netherworld in hopes for eternal life, depicted and associated the narcotic blue water lily with the divine. It's not the scope of this presentation to question how it was used in ritualistic healing or in a quest for spiritual immortality, but rather to demonstrate that its cultural reverence was not limited to the old world, meaning Asia, India, and Egypt, but extended to the new world on the other side of the Atlantic, particularly Central America and modern-day Mexico. Guadalajara is the capital city of the Mexican state of Jalisco and means Valley of Stones. It was named after the Spanish city, Guadalajara, the word originating from Spanish Arabic, a variety of Arabic spoken in Spain back when it was under Muslim rule. Guadalajara is probably best known for tequila and, of course, mariachi music. Tequila is a regionally specific name for a distilled beverage made from the blue agave plant, primarily in the area surrounding the city of Tequila, about 40 miles northwest of Guadalajara. Although the Aztec were making a fermented beverage from the agave plant long before the Spanish arrived in 1521, tequila was officially established in the year 1666. Tequila is commonly served as a shot with salt and lime, and Mexican laws state that tequila can only be produced in the state of Jalisco, with very few exceptions. Tobacco and various hallucinogenic drugs were smoked all over the Americas as early as 5000 BC in shamanistic rituals. For example, here we see a Mexican carving from the temple at Palenque depicting a Mayan priest using a smoking tube. And here, Aztec women are handed flowers and smoking tubes before eating at a banquet. And that's from the 16th century Florentine Codex. There's an Aztec goddess whose body was said to have consisted of tobacco. And the priests that performed human sacrifices wore tobacco gourds as symbols of divinity. The smoking of tobacco and various other hallucinogenic drugs was used to achieve trances and to come into contact with the spirit world. Reports from the first European explorers and conquistadors to reach the Americas tell of rituals where native priests smoke themselves into such high degrees of intoxication that it's unlikely that the rituals were limited to just tobacco. Cocaine is extracted from coca tree leaves, a plant native to South America and used across the Americas since ancient times. In 1976, traces of cocaine and tobacco, plants only to have existed in the Americas prior to Columbus, were found in some Egyptian mummies. While some were initially skeptical of the findings, samples from 134 separate bodies were taken dating to a time long before Columbus or the Vikings. One third of these contained both nicotine and cocaine. Guadalajara, Guadalajara, Guadalajara. Henut Taui was an ancient Egyptian priestess during the 21st dynasty whose remains were mummified. She's mainly known for being one of the so-called cocaine mummies. Little to nothing else is known about her life, other than that she was a priestess in the temple of Amun at Thebes, where erotic rituals were thought to fortify the soul, allegedly helping it to retain its consciousness after bodily death. After her own death, her body was embalmed and mummified, eventually becoming the property of the King of Bavaria, likely Ludwig I, who later donated it to an archaeology museum in Munich, Germany, where it is still located today. In 1992, German toxicologist Svetlana Balabanova discovered traces of cocaine, hashish, and nicotine on Henut Taui's hair, as well as on the hair of several other mummies of the museum, which is significant in that the only source of cocaine and nicotine had at that time been considered to be the coca and tobacco plants native to the Americas, and were not thought to have been present in Africa until after Columbus's voyage to the Americas. While some have tried to debunk these claims by alleging that the results were contaminated or that someone had sprinkled some cocaine powder on the mummies, keep in mind that the test indicated that it was ingested when the specimen was alive. While the results continue to be disputed by mainstream academia, these are the same politically motivated academics that deny archaeological evidence on both sides of the Atlantic, such as the swastika symbol, which has a worldwide distribution in antiquity and was common among the Phoenicians, a seafaring civilization credited with disseminating the modern alphabet that we still use today. Not to mention bronze, a metal that is a combination of tin and copper. Many tons of copper were mined in ancient Michigan, yet Native American artifacts can only account for a small fraction of this copper. While there are not enough copper mines in the Old World to account for the quantity that emerged during the Bronze Age. The archaeology of the New World, starting with the swastika and Clovis or Solutrean bifacial stone tool technology, the linguistics, such as the root word Atlan, where the word Atlantis comes from, the genetics, including haplogroup X, and the plethora of mythology, which implicates transatlantic contact during the entire Holocene, and even the late Pleistocene, is still all ignored by mainstream academia and the controlled media because it flies in the face of an obsolete, politically motivated fairy tale known as the Out of Africa hypothesis. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.